I'm going to talk today mostly about some observations I made while I was doing an internship this summer at Splunk. And at the end, I'm going to use that context to start talking a little bit about this idea for an analysis recommendation tool that I had. And this work is new and mostly in the ideas phase, so I'm looking forward to getting your feedback on those. So first, let me set the scene a little bit. Companies are collecting lots of data in order to drive business decisions. And this includes data about who is using their systems, how their systems are performing, what their customers are doing, so on. With this quantity and variety of data, new analyses are enabled. And the desired outcome of these analyses is to generate actionable business information. However, companies don't always know how to do this. Anecdotally, many companies are still in the phase of collecting lots of data because they can collect it, but they don't exactly know what to do with all the data they're collecting yet. So what should they do to make good use of this data, and why aren't they already doing it? So I've speculated on some of the reasons for that. One intuition is that sitting down with a data set and getting it to actually tell you something often requires a lot of ad hoc and somewhat manual tweaking and teasing. And usually each data set is approached somewhat differently, so you have a lot of one-off scripts and solutions that you've used before, but you can't quite reuse them. So there's a lot of duplicated effort, and this is true even in cases where platforms like Splunk make it a lot easier to interact with your data by taking care of a lot of the handling issues for you. Another valid reason is that data analysis doesn't come easy. Another reason is that in many cases, you need expert-level domain knowledge about the data and about the system that generated it. Moreover, you need to be able to interpret the data differently depending on what your role is. For instance, if you're a marketing person or a systems administrator, oftentimes the person who knows what questions to ask about the data isn't the same as the person who understands how to ask them. And a third plausible reason is that it's difficult to be able to combine arbitrary data sets in arbitrary ways. So often companies will set up these analysis pipelines where they'll run something every day and compute something very specific, and they'll include that in a report to some business managers that they hand out daily or monthly. And this is useful, but integrating new data sets into this is difficult. And part of the reason for this is it's hard to know a priori what questions you will have and what data you need to collect. So in the rest of the talk, I'll first give a brief outline of Splunk so you understand the context that I'm thinking in. And then briefly, I'll talk about some customer queries that I collected while I was there this summer. And then I'll spend some time talking about some observations I made about these queries. And then last, I'll introduce my thoughts on this analysis recommendation tool idea. I have a lot of slides for that last topic, it was suggested I shouldn't go into, but if I have time, I might go into them anyway, if you guys are interested. If people aren't always making good use of their data, then what are they doing with it? As I mentioned, I spent the summer at Splunk. Splunk is a company that has a platform for indexing and querying large amounts of semi-structured machine-generated data sets, such as logs. And it's capable of handling very large amounts of data and processing as it streams in. It has a MapReduce-like architecture internally, which I won't talk about today, but I can refer you to papers on that. I think it's appeared at previous iterations of this workshop, so you might have already seen that. Just as a curiosity, how many people are familiar with Splunk? Okay. I'll show some like screenshots and stuff, so maybe that makes it a little more clear. So Splunk has a huge number of customers and very diverse industries. Most of these customers use Splunk to monitor their IT infrastructure, but they're also looking at targeting, going sort of up the stack and targeting people who are making sort of business decisions, sales decisions, that sort of thing. The way customers interact with their data is through a data flow language, which they are trying to brand as SPL, but it hasn't really caught on. This language is supposed to be reminiscent of Unix pipes and grep. Their users are intended to interact with their data primarily through this nice browser-based interface. And there's also a command line interface. And in addition to this, users can create their own visualizations in the form of dashboards and reports. So I'll it's probably easiest if I just show you an example, but a set of these dashboards and reports are referred to as an app. And so this is intended to be used for a specific kind of data like firewall data or PCI compliance or something like that. You have a set of these queries which are specifically for those types of data sets. Okay. Okay, so like when you get Splunk out of the box, it looks like you have some events here, and you type your queries here. This is just a histogram of events over time. So zoomed in a little bit so you can see it better. So this is some log message for like this main Splunk website. It says like how many bytes sent, bandwidth, stuff like that. So as an example of what I mean by apps, so these are screenshots from a web intelligence app and also an operations management app. It just means like here's a set of visualizations. There's way more than this, but each of these visualizations under the hood is just a Splunk query. So what I typed here, I can actually have a command which at the end generates a visualization that looks like this. So this is an analysis pipeline. This is analysis pipeline. So is this. And these were written by an app author who had this specific data set in mind. In this case, it's clickstream data. And they thought users looking at this data would be interested in these kinds of dashboards and these kinds of visualizations. And here's some more examples of apps that you can download through Splunk. So Splunk for Windows, Network Home Monitor, there's hundreds of different kinds. Okay, and so from an abstract level, this is what I was describing. So here you have your analysis pipeline. It's just the form command arguments, pipe into a new command. And so data gets pushed through each stage of the pipeline. Each stage, it's filtered, enhanced, or some other way modified. And then you get your final table, which can be visualized. Here's an example of a Splunk command. So in this example, a user is searching for all events that have the term error in it. They're counting those events grouped by the status field, and then they're doing a lookup with an external table so they can get a description of status code, error code mean. And so they're outputting a list of the different types of errors and a description of them and how many occurred. So when I was at Splunk, I collected thousands of customer searches, and this I'm just going to talk about some subset of them, about 100,000 searches. 10% of those searches were classified as ad hoc, meaning, they weren't scheduled, describing it from that point of view, scheduled means someone wrote it and then they set it to run periodically like a cron job. And so ad hoc are not those. And so, 90% of the searches were scheduled. And then I also collected, for contrast, a bunch of application queries from the five most popular Splunk apps on Splunk Base. So this included Unix, Windows, firewall app, and Splunk deployment monitoring, and also web intelligence. Okay, so the first question I wanted to know was how much data were users looking at? So only about 60-some percent of searches actually specified a time range, but of those, 92% of these specified ranges of less than a day. So in the vast majority of cases, people are looking at extremely recent data. About 80% of cases, maybe more, people are looking at data that's less than 6 hours old. And then the remainder of searches don't tend to look back more than like a year and a half, actually more than just a month. Second thing I wanted to know was how long were these analysis pipelines that were being constructed by the user and by the authors of apps? So this graph on the left is all customer searches, the ad hoc searches, and the scheduled searches. The thing that surprised me is the ad hoc searches are longer than the scheduled searches, which I was expecting people to have more, have like sat down and thought about the scheduled searches and have longer things that they scheduled to run periodically. So I don't have a good explanation for this. In the case of this one is apps versus customers, and this more closely corresponds to my intuition that apps are someone sat down and authored the query, and so it's like more complicated and thought out, and so it'll be longer versus like, you know, someone just doing some sort of like on the spot debugging. And then this is the apps broken down. So the other thing to notice is there's a huge variation in how complicated the queries written by app authors are. And the last thing that we did was just a simple n-gram study, just to sort of get a feel for what people were asking. So it computed up to 10 grams for all customer searches. So for example, what I mean by n-grams, so if your pipeline is like X pipe Y pipe Z, and a two grams would be X, Y, and Y, Z. And this notation just means, the caret means it was the first command in the pipeline, the dollar sign means it was the last command in the pipeline, and then some commands such as stats take second sort of arguments like average or count, and I included those as in the command as well. And I don't look at fields in this study for privacy reasons, so these are just the commands. And the reason this is interesting is because eventually I want to be able to use this to generate a model of customer searches and maybe even use that as input into my analysis recommendation tool. But getting ahead. So in the first case, just 1 grams. A few things to point out. So these in Splunk, it's just sort of an idiosyncrasy of the Splunk language. Everything starts with search, which corresponds to a select from where. So you have search and then some condition or some keyword that you're looking for. And so these top two correspond to, this is about 100% of all searches have search at the beginning. But the surprising thing is 30% of them were just search. That was the only thing people were doing, just a simple keyword search, which is surprising because you'd think if you had a tool like Splunk at your disposal, an expensive tool, that you would do, you'd be doing more than just basically grep. And then the other two commands are, table is mostly just a presentation thing. It just makes it look nicer. And then count, it's counting the number of events. So very simple stuff. For 2 grams, here you have like these top three represent complete pipelines again. Oh, and these percentages I should mention, this is percent of like 1 grams, percent of 2 grams, and so on. And so now in this case, you have people are primarily either doing just search for a number for events, count how many there were, or search for events, give me the most commonly occurring value for this field. So for example, for search top, you might say like search error, top client IP, and that'll give you the client IPs most commonly occurring with in events with error in it. And then rename is again just a presentation issue. It's like giving the field a better name. So still very simple stuff. When you look at longer pipelines, again, you have a complete pipeline here. So these are, again, just presentation issues. Rex is something that extracts fields, which ideally Splunk should be doing automatically. And then same for 4 grams, you still get just presentation, searching for something, and then sort of cleaning up the visualization, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's a valid point that it's useful for that. But I still was surprised to see that people weren't fully leveraging everything that you could do in Splunk. So I think that's why apps are important. But anyway, I'll get to more ideas about that later. So finally, when you start looking at longer pipelines, you see people actually doing a little some other stuff, like looking for max values. Doing some division, it looks like, and that sort of thing. And so I tried to list in this column over here on the right just kind of what the command was doing. And so mostly people are just primarily just filtering, sometimes counting, and then like making the data nice to look at, just presentation. And then also, I pointed this out as I went, but these six here represent complete pipelines. So I thought that was interesting just to point out that those appeared. Okay, so to summarize, most users are interested in extremely recent data, less than a day. And most pipelines are pretty short, user pipelines in particular. App pipelines, a little less so, but still many of them are short. And then analysis pipeline semantics, user searches tend to be very simple. So that brings me to my ongoing work, this analysis recommendation tool idea. So the goal of this is to be able to automatically suggest pipelines to users given an arbitrary data set. So to help with this problem of people aren't really sure how to explore their data, they are usually just doing something very simple with it. Maybe in many cases that's fine. Like if you're debugging something and you have a very specific thing you look at, that's fine. But if you're wanting to explore your data set and you're not really sure what you're looking for, this tool, I argue, would be helpful. So maybe just an example would be would make it simpler to understand. So say you've collected all this data, you own an umbrella store, and you've collected this data from your two locations in Alaska and Oklahoma about how many umbrellas you've sold and how much it rains and how many umbrellas you've gift wrapped. This is just kind of a contrived example. So you offer your data set, and you give it to the analysis recommendation tool. So the analysis recommendation tool has you can look at the problem like this. It has this giant space of possible pipelines, which you can think of as like a tree. Because the first step has to be search, and then you have to decide what do I put for the arguments. And you have a number of possible options, all possible conditions, values for fields. And then after you select some steps there, you have to decide what's the second command going to be, and so on. And then so finally, when you reach to the end, a leaf node here, you have a complete pipeline. And so the idea is, how do I choose paths through this tree to find pipelines that would be interesting to suggest to the user? And then at the end, you might, the intelligence represented by this cat here would pick three of those pipelines, or pick some number of those pipelines to suggest the user. So here, let's say it suggests gift wrap, some umbrellas sold over time, and then also this plot, gift wrap versus rainfall. And the idea here is, so the tool doesn't necessarily know what the user will find interesting. It needs to accept feedback from the user and iteratively explore this space. And this is an example where the user might say, this graph doesn't make any sense. So it would have to tell the tool, no, this is a bad visualization, and then the tool could use that information to continue exploring through the space. So that point it didn't make clear before, but iterating through the suggestions and responding to user feedback, I think, would be an important feature of this tool. So what are some possible approaches? Can I rely on all of the data I have collected from customers so far to generate interesting suggestions? How do I search this space of possible suggestions? How do I incorporate user feedback? How do I incorporate features of the data set, such as what kinds of fields are present, what is the variance of those fields, what are the correlations between them, et cetera. So you have all these possible things that the tool could use to drive its search. including features of the data set, like I mentioned, your customer query model, feedback from the user, some heuristics that like I, as a domain expert, might incorporate, and then also the current state of the data set after it's been passed through the first K pipelines. So the idea is that this tool would facilitate data exploration and analysis pipeline construction. And I would first scope the problem by focusing on the kind of data Splunk is used for, so like time series data. And the evaluation could be done by comparing it to these apps. So the tool is, if you handed it a data set that there's an app for, if it could suggest many of the same visualizations that the app suggests, that someone had sat down and thought about and decided this was a useful visualization, then I would consider it successful. So any questions? Sure. Yeah, I didn't, but many people have suggested that, so it's definitely something like the first item on my to-do list. So I'll let you know. Yeah. That's the sort of question you don't ask at this stage, I think, my experience. No need to involve the lawyers. But yeah, I mean, so right now I'm writing a little parser that tries to anonymize the field. So it'll just say, like, if they were searching over, like, email addresses or telephone numbers or words or numbers or whatever, but it doesn't say exactly what they were doing. And another idea I had was to maybe just, like, try to hash everything. So I still am like capturing like what the field was without actually knowing what it was. Does that make sense? And in try to use like hashed searches sort of in my model. Those are two different things I've thought of. Yeah, sorry, I didn't, that's not provided in that slide. So that was like 31% of n-grams, but I can go find that information pretty easily, but from what I recall, it's like a pretty high number, like I'd say over half. So your question is like, oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So I remember looking at this, I think there were about like 500-ish that were looking at less than a minute. So there's 100,000 queries. So 500 is a kind of a small fraction. There were some, surprisingly, that were looking at the last second. There were like in the tens. What's the minimum time granularity that Splunk actually acts on or can deliver on? I'm not sure. I don't know. I guess it might be, like, you can specify as the user how far back to go. So I guess it could potentially be arbitrary. Oh. That latency is going to determine how interesting, you know, short queries are. Right? If the latency is 10 minutes through your system, then asking what happened in the last minute isn't that interesting, right? Because I've got a 10-minute delay already, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if your data came through Splunk in a few seconds, then asking what happened in the last minute is very interesting, right? Do you, and I don't know what Splunk's I think it depends on your installation, really. Sorry. I mean, it is intended. Right. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, well, one thing that occurred to me, your tree looked essentially like a decision tree. I mean, the way they work is trying to, it's information theoretic, bench type that says you would like classify things. Now, it seems in your case, it's a decision tree of decision, of these trees now. It's like which query creates the biggest, best information theoretic partition of the underlying data, that's probably an insight that somebody might want to see.
Yeah, I have actually, in the slides, I didn't go over sort of a list of things I've thought of trying, and decision tree is one of them. But someone recommended I don't get into this. And I also have a whole challenges slide also recommended. So yeah, I've thought of treating it like a classification problem, but one issue with that is I have apps, which I guess are kind of like a training data set, but I'm not sure if they're sufficient for like actually training something. And I guess for a decision tree, maybe you don't. You still need a training data set.
Not really. Yeah, so. Here I'm thinking is an information gate. This way of chopping up the data has a better signal-to-noise ratio than raw.
Right. Yeah.
So like, is this clustering better than clustering everybody as a single set? Mm-hmm. Well, if it's a very good clustering, that means that it's probably presentable.
Yeah.
But that's a good offline thing, especially the challenges thing.
Uh-huh.